Thank you so much for watching. This is Corey from CoreyBakerFilmmaker.com, and I just saw Uncut Gems, written by Ronald Bronstein and the Safdie brothers, and directed by the Safdie brothers. So I caught this movie on Netflix, but originally the plan was I was going to see it in Burbank with Rob and Roberto, but unfortunately, for anyone who knows Burbank, sometimes you get there and there's no parking whatsoever anywhere. So we had driven to Burbank. We were running a little bit late for the show, and then we couldn't find parking for 30 to 45 minutes, and we ended up having to like cancel our tickets and sort of go see something else. I don't remember what we ended up seeing that night, but it wasn't Uncut Gems, and I'm a little bit upset about it because now, having seen it on Netflix, I'm like, God, I really wish I would have been there for that one. It would have been such a cool experience in the theaters. This movie is so pulse-pounding and exciting, and it's constantly moving. It's just got this insane tempo to it that would have been really great in the theatrical experience, but it certainly lives up at home. The plot of this one, Adam Sandler plays Howard, who is a jeweler, and he is hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt to gambling. His whole career is sort of coming undone at the seams because of it. His family life is coming undone at the seams because of it. And this sort of follows a couple days of him trying to make one bet after another to try and bail himself out of this humongous debt that he's found himself in. So much of what makes this movie work is tied to Adam Sandler and the all-out performance that he gives throughout the course of this movie. It was really great to see. I will say this, though, and this movie in particular really seems to fall into this problem that sometimes you'll find, which is if you have a very recognizable star, it can be tough to disassociate yourself from Adam Sandler to Howard, the character that he's playing. Now, I think that Sandler's acting chops in this really did a lot to be able to create the character of Howard, but there wasn't a lot of times where I was looking at the screen and I didn't see Adam Sandler. This is something that happens with this movie a lot because there's a lot of recognizable people who are either playing themselves or versions of themselves. So, I mean, we have Kevin Garnett, we have The Weeknd in this playing themselves, but at the same time, we have, you know, like Mike Francesa, who is playing a bookie, but if anybody who knows who Mike Francesa is, then you immediately can't stop thinking about the fact that we got the mid-afternoon host of the WFAN sports show up on the screen playing the bookie here. So, I mean, like, it's cool in the sense that, like, you get these little touch marks of, like, people you know, but at the same time, we're living in this world where some people are supposed to be real-life versions of themselves, while other people are playing character versions of themselves, but the character versions of themselves are very recognizable. And I mean, you know, just throughout the thing. Idina Menzel is another one where it's just like you see her and you're just like, oh, well, yes. The people that you don't recognize that much are the ones who really do the most incredible job. I think Lakeith Stanfield with the dreads on makes him look different enough where I didn't really recognize it as him for a long period of time. And specifically, there is Julia Fox, who is the socialite in New York and doing her first feature film role in this movie. And she's great. But so much of what I think makes her stand out compared to the rest of the people in this movie is the fact that we have no idea who she is. Like, no outside of New York social scenes person knows who she is. So you are instantly attracted to this person that you have no touchstone for. And it really makes her, in particular, pop off against all these people that you know and recognize. There's something about the human psychology that when you see somebody you recognize, it makes you start thinking about them in other contexts. The thing about this movie that really is interesting is how, like, tense and how it keeps rolling. It just feels like you're on a roller coaster ride and it just keeps going and going and going and you don't know when you're going to get off. Even the moments where things slow down, like there's a moment where basically the whole family is getting together for a Seder dinner and you would think that it would slow down the tension that's going on, but the little things that happen throughout just even add to the intensity. And I think in that regard, this movie does a great job because it also sort of makes you feel the same way you do when you're actually gambling on sports. So I have, from time to time in my life, put bets on sporting events, and sometimes I've put more money than I feel comfortable talking about on a particular game. And the anxiety that you go through as you're watching because you have money riding on it is unlike almost anything else. You might be a really super dedicated sports fan, and you might live and die with every single play that your team is involved in. But when you also have $1,000 riding on the game, and if they lose, then you're going to lose $1,000, and if they win, you're going to have this huge windfall, then it completely changes the stakes of what you're dealing with when you're watching the game. That being said, I really do feel like somebody needs to have a conversation with Howard about how he's gambling here, because there are some really dumb things that he's doing. First of all, the first bet with Francesa is kind of all over the place, because he's betting, like, you know, the under and the over on different parts of the game. It's a three-team parlay and stuff, like, it just doesn't make sense. The final bet that he makes that is supposed to, like, jam him out of this whole situation, one of the parts of it is a three-way parlay where one of the parts is winning the opening tip-off. People who are listening to me, who don't know how basketball works, winning the opening tip-off is not a big deal. In fact, there's no real reason why you need to win the opening tip-off, because the other team gets to start with the ball at the half and gets to set up their offense from there. So actually, if you're thinking about what is the most beneficial way, it's losing the opening tip-off would actually be... I mean, it's like I put money on the Super Bowl, right? And I say, I want the Chiefs to win, and I'm going to put, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars on the Chiefs winning, but I also am going to put it on the coin flip at the beginning of the game. A 50-50 chance that no real person has any kind of influence over. And I'm going to make whether or not the bet succeeds or fails based off of whether or not I win a coin toss at the start of it all. It's silly. It's stupid. And I don't understand why part of the anxiety of this whole thing is watching Howard's stupid bets, but I mean, like, the real anxiety for me comes with the why are you betting this way to begin with. I don't want to get too much into the ins and outs of the plot, because I really do feel like this is the type of movie that you want to just sort of come into as blind as you possibly can. I don't feel like I've said anything that really ruins anything. It's more little bits and pieces here. That being said, so much of this movie focuses on this gem that Howard gets from Ethiopia, which is supposed to, like, be worth millions of dollars and save him and get him out of all his financial hardships. But he doesn't care for it the way that he should. And, you know, that's a big part of the first half of the movie, is trying to get back his opal and the allure that it has over Kevin Garnett, and, you know, the celebrity structure of New York, jewelry and stuff like that. It's all very interesting. I really like movies that are set in places like New York and are very, very much feel like New York movies. I feel, even though I don't know anybody in the jewelry business like this, I feel like I know Howard. I feel like from the time that I spent in New York, I know Howard. And if you lived in New York, and you currently live in New York or any of those things, then you know Howard. Like, this is just a person that lives in the ether out there. Before I go further, I want to give a huge tip of the cap to the entire crew on this one, because something is going on in this movie that I don't think people who don't work on set necessarily think of that much, but this movie is covered with mirrors and covered with reflective surfaces and covered with reflective glass and everything alike. This movie lives in floor-to-ceiling windows and mirrors. And it's very difficult to shoot movies like that, because you have to be considerate of that when you put up lights. You have to be considerate of that when you have the microphone swinging, the boom mic in front of the actors and stuff like that. You have to be considerate about the reflection of the camera and the crew, wherever you might be shooting. There are a lot of extra things that you have to think about when you are shooting around so many mirrors and windows and everything like that. Even the sunglasses that Howard wears throughout the movie, whether it's morning, day, or night, it's very hard to shoot this thing, because you can see reflections of what you're looking at inside of the sunglasses. And to be able to shoot things so that you can just avoid them makes things very difficult. And they did an incredible job. On top of that, they shot in 35mm, which to me is just an additional attaboy, because that is way more difficult to shoot on film than it is to shoot on digital, especially on something like this with so many moving pieces and so much complex camera work that is going on. One thing that I was definitely thinking about while this movie was going on, certainly after it ended, was sort of the talk of whether or not Adam Sandler was snubbed for an Academy Award this past year for his performance in this movie. I will say, I don't think personally that Adam Sandler was snubbed. I think it's a really great performance, but there were a lot of really great performances that were sort of left on the periphery of the Best Actor race last year. I think Sandler's is the most notable because he's the highest impact name, but I feel like there were other places where this movie could have been nominated. It just, it didn't really have a path for a win anywhere, though. I mean, like, you're not going to beat Deakins in 1917 if this thing was up for cinematography and editing and all the, like, it was a much higher slog for this movie to actually win something. That being said, I feel like Sandler maybe was the fifth best actor of the year last year, so maybe he should have been included in the running, but it was Joaquin's award to lose, and it just happened that Sandler didn't get a trophy for this. I think in a lesser year where there weren't as many high caliber performances as there was in this past year, then there might have been more of a conversation about Sandler sort of sneaking in and getting into the conversation more. It just was a super tough field, and I don't think anybody should take this personally. I would bet the leaderboard right now, but I would want 2-1 odds. It's leaderboard time. This flick is interesting. I don't know if it ever transcends and becomes like this all-time great movie, but it's the type of movie that I'm not going to forget. At the end of the day, this movie is just an all-out thrill ride, and I was in for every single minute of it. Is it the best movie ever made? No. Is it a very good movie? Yes. Does it have its shortcomings? Yes. Will you enjoy yourself? Probably. I really think that this flick is one of those great movies that you don't necessarily remember years from now as like this incredible movie that changed your life, but more as like this really important movie that has a lot of moments that just sort of fill out this whole universe and make it interesting for you to live in for a little while. And for that, but if I had to give it a rating, I would give Uncut Gems 8 even. Really enjoyable flick. It's got its little problems, but nothing you can't get over. And more than anything, I'd really just be interested. I missed Good Time when it came out. Something I definitely need to catch up on now, because I heard it has the same sort of excitement built into it. But more than that, I'm just looking forward to the next thing the Safdies do. And especially, I'm looking forward to the next opportunity that Adam Sandler has to step out and do something a little bit more serious. I really do like Sandler as an actor, even though he, you know, I gets pegged for a lot of the dumber movies that he does, but he knows how to make it work. He really does, and a tip of the cap to him and to the entire cast and crew on a very enjoyable flick. That's it for me. Thank you so much for watching. You can find more at my website, CoreyBakerFilmmaker.com, Facebook.com/CoreyBakerFilm, and at LegendCV5 on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. If you have anything you want me to see, go ahead and leave it in the comments below. Let me know. Make sure you like and subscribe and put it on the notifications to hear when my next review comes out. And until then, guys, have a great day. And please, 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 do not bet money on an opening tip. It is an awful bet. It is a straight up awful bet.